Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at home repairs for you today. There are some home repairs that can wait, and there are some that cannot wait, especially, you know, if you got a leaky house. It can't wait. I'm pretty sure. John Freiberger is going to agree with me on that for sure. He's a owner of Freiberger & Associates and also is a Wisconsin registered home inspector, specializes in evaluating older structures and does a lot of work on older structures here in the state. And it's always great to have him come by and talk with you and with me about what's going on with our homes. So have a question or comment for him. I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Our Facebook page titled The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question there. Maybe you got a photo of some little problem area. We can take a look and see what we can come up with off our Facebook page. And John, welcome back.
Great to be back, Larry.
For some reason, there seem to be more problems with leaks, and it's always associated with spring.
It seems to be associated with spring rain and this year spring wind.
Yeah.
So we've had water will run uphill, as we know. The sink works on our second floor, so if you apply pressure to water, it can really get through walls. And we're seeing a lot of water being driven under roofs, through walls, around flashings, any place where we do not have good seals or good construction practices. We've just seen a tremendous number of leaks this spring.
And it's mostly around the roof area? Or?
Well, what's interesting this year is we are seeing a large number of wall leaks and also a large number of masonry leaks.
Due to the wind,
correct, because you put a little bit of pressure on water, and it is absolutely amazing how fast it'll go through a brick veneer. And if the brick veneer has not been properly back drained, so there's a 1-inch cavity behind it, and if there aren't weeps and flashing to get that water out of the wall, that water can go right down into the ring joists and eventually end up down in your basement.
And it's probably difficult sometimes to be even able to tell where the leak. You know, if you got a leak, suddenly there's water.
Well, that's the things that a homeowner can look for if you have a brick house is, number one, well, certainly, you see the water. If you get down in the basement and there's brown stains and there's water running in, you know where it is. But the other thing you can do is you can go outside and look for what's called efflorescence, which is basically minerals and salts. If the wall behind the brick gets wet, that moisture will work its way to the outside and it'll bring some minerals with it and deposit it on the wall when the water evaporates. So if you say, let's say you've got a window in your house and you've got a windowsill and it's sort of flat and the caulking isn't good and you see some white powdery stuff under it, that means that you've got some water. It's probably getting in through that sill and is not getting out of the wall.
So this is a concern. You got to get that fixed.
Well, we've seen 2- and 3-year-old houses where we had structural decay, a 2x6 house where you could actually, it was down to 2x4s. You had lost 2 inches of the framing in just a couple of years.
Wow.
One of the problems we have with modern houses is we use a lot of things like the blue foam that we see everywhere that doesn't allow walls to dry very well. It has a perm rating of 0.6, so it doesn't dry well. And, of course, the inside of the house has got a complete vapor barrier. So if water gets through the masonry, around some flashing, and through that water barrier, behind that foam, gets into that wall, it's going to start growing mushrooms in short order, and you can get a tremendous amount of decay because that wall just doesn't dry.
So are there, what do we do to avoid these kinds of problems?
Well, a little bit of reading is always a good thing. It's amazing what building science, I was thinking about that on the way over, and how much we have learned in the last 20 years. What happened in the 70s and 80s, Larry, is we started building houses differently. Instead of using boards, we use what a lot of people call was wood. That is, it was wood at one point, but it's all chipped up and made into oriented strand board or press board. And you remember the old Masonite sidings, particle board sidings, and that sort of thing. So we introduced all these new labor-saving and cost-saving materials, and a whole lot of them failed. You know, old houses like mine with the board sheathing, just they get wet, but it doesn't rot right away. Oriented strand board, It really deteriorates quick. So we spent 20 years creating problems, and then we spent about 20 years figuring out how to cure the problems. And to be able to go on, you can go online now, and you can learn a tremendous amount as a homeowner by simply Googling the correct sites. And one thing that I really encourage people to do, if you are going to be re-siding your house with, let's say, CertainTeed weatherboards,
okay,
I would say, Larry, make sure you go to the CertainTeed site, download the installation instructions, print two copies, one for you, and then hand the other one to the crew when they're there. Because 90% of the cement siding we're seeing that's put on is put on wrong. 90% of the masonry we're seeing put on is put on wrong. About 10% of the shingles we see are put on wrong. We have so many untrained people in the construction industry since the Great Recession, when so many of the older guys with all the knowledge quit. They retired early because there wasn't any work. We got a lot of new people in who have not been trained. And we really need to have our Wisconsin listeners be smart consumers. In many cases, with a little bit of time online and reading the instructions, you're going to know as much, if not more, than the crew. It's sort of upsetting, but that is the case.
Well, there's another issue I just wanted to bring up before we go to the phones, and that has to do with lead. And, just recently, within the last week, there was an article in the paper about Lake Mills, one of our towns, and then also discussed some other towns where there were some potential issues with lead in the water. And, of course, with the problems in Michigan, that's the lead in water has been on a lot of people's minds.
That's right. And Lake Mills is a beautiful old town, great old downtown.
Yeah.
Some of the buildings restored, wonderful old houses along Main Street.
Yeah.
But a lot of those houses are built during the period when we use lead plumbing. And lead plumbing is wonderful stuff. It was flexible. You could bend it. You didn't have to have all these elbows and things that we have nowadays. So it was a great technological advance. And many of these houses still have this old lead plumbing, and people are going to have to get rid of it. We had a major campaign in Madison 20 years ago to change our services. The city even gave people some financial help to do it. And a lot of these older towns that still have a lot of lead are going to have to get the lead out.
Yeah. Is there a way for you as a home, or for me as a homeowner, to tell if I've got lead pipes, for example? Or
yes. Go to your water meter, and you'll see the pipe coming out of the floor, out of the wall. And if it's lead, it's going to look gray. And if you scratch it with a screwdriver or a steak knife or whatever you have handy, it's going to look silver versus copper. So that means you have a lead service. Then if you walk around your basement, and you see some round penetrations in your basement floor about the size of a one-pound coffee can, mm-hmm, with what looks like a lever with a 90-degree angle sticking out of it, those are the old control and shutoff valves for lead pipes that were run under your basement floor. Now, those may have been bypassed, but they may not have. And then you look in your basement on the framing, and lead pipes are simply obvious. They look like lead. They're the mm-hmm silver color. And they were beautiful because they came with a bracket that was molded right into them. Usually you put four screws through it that held the pipe to the wall. So you, by visually inspecting, you should be able to tell whether you have lead or not. If you see a fairly small piece of copper pipe stuck down into the floor, it may mean that you actually have a lead service, and they stuck that small piece of copper into the lead service. Because what you should have is you should have a flexible tubing coming out made of copper, which would be usually inch, inch and a quarter, inch and a half in size. If you see a half inch or three-quarter inch going into the floor, you're going to have to do a little excavation to see if you still have lead.
But it's important to – can you test your – you can test your water level – or your waters for level for
yes,
lead as well.
That is correct. You can have your water tested. But a visual inspection is going to uncover probably – 95% of the lead pipes?
Yeah, there we go. Beth in Wausau has something for us. Beth, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi, thank you. I love your show. We have a deck the whole length, the west side of our house. So so it faces the backyard, and that part of the deck is boarded off. The side of the deck faces the south, and that side is boarded off. The boards on the south side continue to rot, and every year we have to replace these big I guess, I don't know, they're square, and we have to have like three of them and then repaint them and all that. Is there any other product that we could be using for that than wood?
So, Beth, this is part of the wooden structure of the deck, not the boards that you walk on. This is actually part of the structure that is supporting the part you walk on?
No, it's not supporting it, and it's not part that we walk on. It's the framing of the deck. It's the it would be the outside of the deck, so, between the driveway and the deck itself.
All right, so this is like a decorative skirt board or something that's closing off the underside? Okay.
Right.
Well, if you're using what we call white wood, which would be, you know, the white-looking stuff with some knots in it that people use for everything, carefully painted, primed on both sides, it'll rot in 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
So you really need to look at a different material. Now, if you're close to grade, the best thing that I know out there is a product called AZEK, A-Z-E-K.
Okay.
It's made of PVC, the same thing that your waste pipes in your plumbing system are made of. So AZEK is one of the few products that you can actually partially bury, and it simply won't rot. The only problem we have with AZEK is because it's plastic, is it contracts and expands thermally. So if you have like a 16-foot long piece, that may move as much as a quarter of an inch. It usually comes in white with a wood texture, though AZEK also makes all kinds of moldings nowadays. And there may be other PVCs out there as well that you may find that you can use.
Okay.
But if you have, wood is really supposed to have 6 inches of airspace, unless it's treated. And, of course, treated wood is hard to paint. So even if you put down something like cedar, even if it's a expensive, dense, inland, you know, red cedar, it still is probably going to soak up some water, shed the stain, and eventually fall apart. Cementous siding needs to have clearance as well. So a cement siding is not going to work. So that really leaves you with the things like the PVCs.
And the AZEK, is that something that could be put like on, because it would be placed on top of blacktop, right next to the driveway, up to the top of the deck, and that wouldn't bother, that wouldn't crack or anything?
That is correct. It's a very durable 3/4-inch thick product, and most of your lumber yards are going to carry it. AZEK also makes a full line of decking materials, that is the part that you actually walk on, and they make a through-color decking, which I think is really one of the best out there. It's one that we specify pretty frequently for people when they are when they're putting in a new deck.
There we go.
All right, thank you so much.
Yep, thanks, Beth. Appreciate your call. John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates, our guest today. Call in with your home improvement questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network. At 2 o'clock today, Kathleen Dunn is joined by two astrophysicists, and they're going to be talking about the latest space initiative to search for alien life. That's at 2 today. Right now, we're talking about potential aliens in your home. No, actually, we're talking about, maybe aliens in the form of mold in your home. We're talking about leaky homes and all kinds of other home improvement issues with John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates. Join in with your questions. Again, 800-642-1234. Gary and Rhineland are up next. Hi, Gary. Thank you for calling.
Sure. Hey, thank you. Larry, you're a very good host, and you're pretty funny, too.
Okay, thanks.
Hey, I have a friend up in Hayward that he's having his house built, and he's doing some work by himself and such. And I don't know who did his basement. It is a poured wall. And I'm wondering, do you do poured walls, or do you think them as the same thing as a block wall, meaning water penetration? Because what he has on the outside is insulation that has been applied to the outside wall. He is finishing the inside of the basement. He is going to have like a zone heat, meaning not in the floor or anything, but where the basement can be heated separately than from his upstairs. He is going to have a bedroom or so in the basement. And I had told him about putting, right now he has some sweat on these poured walls, And so I told them about putting plastic on there first before you apply your other stuff. Now I only suggested that because listening to your show and thinking I understood this somewhat, but maybe not at all. So.
Well, is this wall just poured recently?
It was poured last fall.
Oh, okay, last fall.
Last fall.
All right.
Well, that wall may still be curing out a little bit, especially depending upon what's on the exterior. If he put a real good quality waterproofing, damp proofing on the outside, it pretty much has to dry to the inside because it's got a vapor and water barrier on the exterior. So he could be getting some sweating on that wall. The other possibility is that he's got some condensation on the wall. If that basement relative humidity is really high, say in the 55-60%, and if those walls are quite cool. Now, as far as putting plastic on the inside, that's actually forbidden by the Uniform Dwelling Code. And what we found over the years, we used to do it that way. In the 70s and 80s, we did put vapor barriers over basement walls, but that is now forbidden because we're trapping moisture that simply can't dry anywhere. So when I'm looking at plans and somebody's talking to me about a basement wall, the number one thing we want is a good water barrier on the exterior, and then usually to get a 10 or 20 year warranty from the waterproofing guys, you have to have Forma drain or drain tile or something. And the new Forma drain is great because it's poured into the concrete wall. We don't have that old plastic pipe that had a tendency to be too light and get crushed. So keep the water out from the outside. And then on the interior, this is going to be a heated space. Temperature should be relatively high. The humidity should be relatively low, and we shouldn't have a problem with dew point and condensation as long as everything is done right. But let the wall breathe on the inside.
There we go.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Gary. Appreciate the call. John in Milwaukee up next. Hi, John. Thank you for calling.
Sure. Hey, Larry. I like your show. You've got some great topics.
Thank you.
I'd like to correct the gentleman on a couple of things. I'm a licensed plumber, master plumber here in Milwaukee, and I don't recommend taking a knife or anything, a screwdriver, and scratching your water service. I don't recommend excavating around the floor or around any of those pipes either. If you hit one of those pipes, the only shutoff is the one out in the street. And the only people who have keys for that are usually the city. So I would definitely, it's okay to look, or call and ask a plumber, or you can even call the city because they'll have a good idea as to where you are and where your water service is. Second thing is, in a lead pipe, as water is being used, calcium is drawn out of the water and coats the inside of that lead pipe. So there is next to no leaching of lead or into the water once that pipe's been coated. And you can cut a piece of lead pipe, and you can actually see that white calcium coating inside there that protects it. And no lead leaches in there. The only time lead will leach out, and it's just like lead paint, is when it's disturbed.
All right. Well, let's. I'm sure there are some things that John will agree with, and maybe some things that he won't agree with. Let's find out.
Well, I partially agree with all of it. Certainly, if you scratch a pipe, do it lightly, just enough to identify. And when I say you may have to excavate with copper, I mean, always use a licensed professional. Don't make a hole in the floor, because if that copper is stubbed into the end of a lead pipe, it could very easily come out. So that's a good caution from John there. Now, and John's also correct that we do certainly get the calcium buildup in areas that have a lot of lime in the waters. But, of course, what happened in Flint, Michigan is they started using river water, and they used water that was slightly acidic. And we do have areas in Wisconsin where we are using relatively soft water. So I certainly agree that areas with very hard water, we tend to get accretion. And, in fact, we were joking before we went on the air talking about that. The big problem with a lot of lead services is you're not getting water through the pipe anymore. And so a lot of people replace them because the second floor bathrooms and things weren't working well. But we do have places in Wisconsin with soft water. We may even have places in Wisconsin with acidic water. So we still need to be cognizant that if we have lead plumbing, it's probably a good idea to get that water tested.
That makes good sense. Thanks, John. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. So we have Jennifer from Zane up next. Hi, Jennifer.
Hello. How are you guys?
Great. Appreciate the call. What can we do for you today?
Sure. So we have a bathroom, a remodeled bathroom. Actually, it was an addition onto our house, and we found out whoever did it kind of vented it wrong. So we're getting the venting corrected. But my concern is in the shower, there is a little bit of black mold up in the upper corner because the fan hasn't been able to do its job.
Yeah.
What are tips or tricks to make sure that we get rid of this mold and just don't paint over it?
Well, that's a good one. In the old days, people were using bleach, which I really don't recommend because it's, we're dealing with something that's volatilized and not good for you. Mm-hmm. I think the first thing I would do is try to scrub it with Dawn dish soap. Okay. Dawn dish soap is, every now and then you'll maybe read about these shorebirds get into oil and things. What they're washing them with generally is Dawn dish soap. It's a wonderful surfactant, and it'll seem to cut through almost everything. So go ahead, scrub it down well. If it's up in the corner, an old toothbrush is a great thing to use. And then you may want to put a layer of Bins or Kills or one of the alcohol-based spray sealers over it, and then paint it. And as long as you can keep that relative humidity in that bathroom low with your new fan, then you shouldn't have a further problem.
No.
Okay.
Pretty simple.
Great. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for calling. What is it about Dawn dish soap? I have Dawn dish soap at home, and it's an amazing product.
It is. It's just a really good formulation, and I remember during the Exxon Valdez disaster, which is many, many years ago, is that was the product that they were using for scrubbing the shorebirds. And I did a little research, and I've been recommending it ever since.
Mark in Kansasville has something for us. Hi, Mark.
Howdy. How are things going?
Great. Appreciate your call.
Great. Got a quick question here. We have a leaky skylight, and I've been trying to get this fixed for almost a year. And I contact people, usually roofers. And, they say, oh, we're going to come out, and, they never show up. And so I just need it. I need to know how to get somebody out here to take a look at it, see what it needs. My guess is it's going to need to be replaced. And is there a website I can contact, a phone number, an organization? I'll really appreciate the help.
All right.
Well, if you know what the skylight is, it's a Velux or one of the real common ones, as we were saying earlier, you can go to the website and get all the installation instructions. Usually when skylights are leaking, somebody's flashed them wrong, and that's usually a fairly simple fix for a roofer. But again, go ahead, download the installation instructions and take a look at it. I don't generally recommend people get up on their roofs. The problem, we were talking about this earlier, of getting good tradesmen is really difficult because so many people retire during the recession. About all you can do is, if you have a pretty good idea what's wrong because you've downloaded the installation instructions and the flashing doesn't look right, you can order a new flashing kit or simply order an entire new skylight. And if you have the instructions, a skylight can be put in by a knowledgeable carpenter or even a knowledgeable handyman. But again, print two copies of anything you download as far as instructions. You keep one copy, give another copy to the person who's actually doing the work, and be sure to check it.
Yeah, well, I think I can understand that. The only problem is that...
You can't get anybody out there.
Yeah, that's the problem. Okay, I mean most of I've talked to a couple of general contractors, and they say, well, geez, it's too small of a job. Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You're going to, but you may be able to get a handyman. Just make sure whoever does it has a Wisconsin contractor's license because they have to have insurance to have that. But a carpentry contractor or a roofing contractor should be able to do that, or even somebody who has a good general repair. Some of these companies, there's a couple of them in the Madison area that started out just doing siding, but they've gotten to the point where they also install windows and skylights. So you can also look at people that maybe do replacement windows. They may be knowledgeable.
Oh.
But, of course, ask them, and try to have everything ready for them. So if you think the skylight is sort of at the junk stage and you're going to replace it, then go to your lumber yard, order the new Velux skylight or whatever brand you're going to get. Have it there. Just say, look, I've got all the materials. I've got some matching shingles. All you have to come out is come out and do the labor. I'll make it simple for you.
Okay.
All right. Worth a try. And that's, you know, that's kind of a pretty easy money then.
You know? It is, but as Mark is finding, as I keep saying, it is so hard to get good people now because we're not training them. People don't want to go into construction anymore, and we lost all the guys my age.
Well, Sarah sent us a note on Facebook, which is not a good thing here. We're taking a look at the back corner of her 120-year-old basement floor. Is like pebbles set in concrete. That area seeps water every spring, sometimes even pours in like a freshwater spring, creating a river in my basement. Is there a hardware store product that can be applied to seal it?
Easy answer, Larry. No.
Unfortunately.
No, what we have is we've got very old, deteriorated concrete. It's been exposed to soil acids. It's losing a lot of its binder, and it really can't be patched. Now, there are things out there that are called concrete patches. They're latex-based, and they've got additives, et cetera. But I can guarantee that it's going to peel off because the water pressure coming up through the floor is going to simply pop it off. I don't know whether Sarah has a sump pit in the basement. What she may want to do is call a contractor, have them make a hole in this concrete, put in a sump pit and a sump pump, and let's relieve that hydrostatic pressure that's pushing that water up through the floor. That may be enough to keep that basement dry.
All right. Let's turn to some other callers now. Mark in Milwaukee is up next. Hey, Mark. Thank you for calling.
Hey, gentlemen. How's it going?
Great. Appreciate the call.
You betcha. I'm kind of going to go the other route. I've got a house that's I've been in for 6 years, and basically I don't have any water coming in my crack at all, and I don't have any water along the walls. Can I assume that somewhere there's some type of backup?
Or you just don't have any water right underneath.
You may simply have a well-drained site. You're maintaining your gutters. Your downspouts are draining far enough from the house. You've got a half inch of pitch for 10 feet around the house. It could be you don't have a problem, Mark. I mean, it's a shocking thing to say, but it could be that there's nothing wrong.
Okay.
That's the way my house, my basement
right.
is.
Right. When I do home inspections, I do see many of the sump pits that have no water in, and they're 10 or 20 years old, and they have nothing in them but dust.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah, that's a good thing. Thanks, Mark. Thanks a lot for calling. Dave in Minnetonka, Minnesota, up next. Hi, Dave.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got a house that was built in the 1950s with an unfinished basement.
Okay.
And I'm wondering about insulating the exterior side of the foundation wall. I've heard you can use rigid foam and dig down about 2 feet, put it against the wall, and then come out parallel or perpendicular to the wall another couple of feet, and that'll keep your basement a lot warmer. Is that true, and what's the process of going about that?
Yeah, that is true, and I think I can give you something to download. Oh, let's see. I'm of course, now I know right where it is in my computer, and it seems like it's a CSI manual. It's a civil engineering manual that actually has all the formulas, discussion, and drawing for how to do that sort of insulation work. Unfortunately, it is not popping into my head, Dave. So what I'm going to ask you to do is to email me at frei@chorus.net, chorus like a group of singers, C-H-O-R-U-S. And then I believe I've got a digital copy of that manual, and I'll send it to you. It's very well designed. Right. It's very well set out, and it is all engineered. It is also accepted by the state of Wisconsin and probably by the International Building Code as a way of providing insulation and even frost protection, which is not your problem, for foundations.
There
All right,
go.
Great.
We'll be happy to get that to you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Thanks for calling. Mike and Stevens Point, you are next. Hi, Mike. Thanks.
Hi, how you doing?
Great.
Thank you for my call. Say, I've got an unusual question for you. We have a leak that occurs about once a year in the springtime. Comes through our kitchen cabinets. We can get torrential rains during the summer. Nothing happens, but this, and it'll happen once in the springtime. I'm kind of expecting it's going to happen pretty soon now. We're getting this warm weather. And that's when it seems to happen, when we get some warm weather. And it only happens like once, and then it's done. Mm-hmm. Well, any ideas what that would be?
I do. And we can actually test for it.
Okay.
How steep a roof do you have, Mike?
Oh, it's a standard pitch.
Like,
you know,
412.
Yeah, 412. Probably.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, get up there very carefully on the roof, have somebody hand you a hose, and run it for an hour.
All right.
My guess is you're going to get no leaks.
Right.
And, of course,
yeah.
You're going to want to watch. You're going to want to take a look in the attic.
Right.
Now, do you have soffits above your cabinets? Drywall boxes?
Yes.
Okay, good. Go up in your attic and see how well they are insulated and air sealed. My guess is they aren't.
Yeah.
They aren't
yeah,
well air sealed. I think what's happening is because the bathrooms in the kitchen are the most humid rooms in the house. That's where you're producing moisture.
Right.
That during the winter, because of air buoyancy, warm, moist air is moving up into your attic.
Okay.
And it's condensing out on something up there.
Sure.
And then in the spring, it melts and it drips down to the kitchen. So you can test the roof to exclude that there is a roofing leak. And then what you can do in the kitchen is you can get an insulation contractor to come in, and I would have him maybe move the insulation away over that area,
mm-hmm.
and then air seal it. And he can do that either with the little cans of foam, you know, running around and getting all the penetration so the air cannot get into the attic. Or he could actually spray 1 or 2 inches of urethane foam over that entire area and then put the insulation back over it. That mm-hmm. should permanently end that problem.
There you go. There you go.
Great. Thanks very much.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Very cool. Sounds like you've had that. you've experienced something like that before with some other folks.
We see a lot of condensation issues. I have a brand new house where I'm meeting them at 3:30 this afternoon to tell them why their drywall is moldy in their laundry. And it's a problem in old houses. It's a problem in new houses. Whenever we have high humidity and we have temperatures that get down to the dew point, which is often around 40 to 42 degrees, which is not that low.
No.
So outside wall, in a corner, in a closet, above a kitchen, above a bathroom, we get condensation, and we can get some pretty nasty molds. And I guess that's the other thing we should mention to Mike, is be a little bit careful. If you've got some mold up in that attic, you may need to have a little remediation done. Mm. But then the air sealing will be important, because if there is any other residual mold, it can't get down into the house.
Oh.
It's locked up there in the attic.
Kim in Prédisac, your turn. Thank you, Kim, for calling.
Hi. Thanks, guys. I have a little house. The original house was floated down the Wisconsin River it was built in 1848 and floated down the river, and then situated where it is, and a little basement put under it. The back addition of the house was added, which was a kitchen and a bath, in 1878. I have a limestone foundation, very old limestone foundation. It has never leaked in the basement portion. I have gone down. A year ago, I was able actually to stick my hand in it, it crumbles and turns to sand, to stick my hand in there. And so I did some tuck pointing and had a gentleman come and go over it with mortar. It gets, I run a dehumidifier always. It gets a bit damp, but I don't have any water. My concern is the portion of the house that I can't get under, the crawl space I can't get into, that limestone foundation under that kitchen and bath area. I don't know what's going on there. I don't know if it's crumbling. I don't, is there anything I can do from the outside to dig down alongside the front of that wall? Any mortar or patching or anything I should do, or any way to check this foundation?
Well, these old foundations, the 18 to 24-inch wide walls, are usually built in two sections. It's almost like there's an inside wall and an outside wall. And then the middle was sort of filled with rubble. And you sort of think about what they had to do. They had to stack up stone, so it was sort of vertical.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how they did it. Generally, what happens is the weight load is really on the exterior of the wall. But, of course, when we find we found houses where the exterior has sort of just fallen off, we've got a foot of wall missing on the outside, but the house hasn't, the frame hasn't moved because it's now sitting on the inside. So I think it is safe to say if there's no way you can get into this crawl space, which is distressing because I'd like you to be able to get into that crawl space.
Yeah.
The thing to do would be to go ahead and make sure the exterior is in good shape. And I think I wouldn't dig down any further than a foot, because what you're going to find is there's going to be even less mortar when you get down below grade, because the soil acids will have caused that lime to simply leave that mortar. And
okay.
If you dig down and then do a good job of pointing that exterior and make sure you use the right mortar. Do not use a modern Portland cement. Don't use that gray stuff, because that will damage your wall. So you have to use an old-fashioned soft mortar, and I have things prepared for listeners. And so if you email me, I can send you all of those. I can send you complete instructions, basically, if you like, because I wrote it up years ago for listeners.
And a particular mortar for that.
That is right. It's a particular mortar. It's easy to make, and it's actually quite easy to use, and it sticks very well. And I have some other instructions about wetting the stone and other things that are in that, I won't call it a publication, but I guess that document that I send out regularly to listeners.
Okay. All righty. That's just kind of concerning to me that I can't, I can't see or get to that. But if
right.
I can dig down and from the outside somehow,
Yes, as long as the exterior of the wall gets a lot more weather than the interior. Now, what worries me a little bit about this crawl space is I'm hoping this crawl space is vented someplace. I'm a little bit worried about wood decay and powder post beetles if we've got moisture coming out of the floor of that crawl space. So I think you may want to do a little bit of investigation and sort of see what the humidity is like. Is there venting? Is there a way of covering the floor in there with visqueen? What is the insulation like? Is that floor cold? You may be able to find a home inspector up in Prairie du Sac, because there's a lot of old houses up there.
Yes.
who knows some of these things. And,
okay.
He doesn't have to inspect the whole house, but call around, find somebody who knows what they're doing, have them come in, shine a light in there, see what the conditions are, and see if you can come up with a plan to make sure that not only are you taking care of the structure of the wall, but you're taking care of humidity and preventing wood decay, radon, and other things.
Okay. It's open, the portion of the basement that you can stand there and you can look into that crawl space.
Oh, that's great. That's wonderful.
I do run a dehumidifier.
Mm-hmm.
It's running right now, so it stays nice and dry.
Mm-hmm.
And
so you might be able to work some visqueen in to that crawl space just from the basement and seal that floor well then.
To make a barrier then.
Yes, exactly, because right now as that basement gets drier and drier, you're getting more and more vapor pressure from that damp soil. So the more you run the dehumidifier, the more you have to run it, because you're actually drawing moisture out of that exposed soil. So if you get that visqueen put down there, that is going to save you on your electricity bill.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. That was a great help. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Great.
Thanks very much,
Kim.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network as we take a look at home improvement, fixing up the place, with our guest today, John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates of Fitchburg. He's a registered home inspector as well, specializes in evaluating and working on older structures, and he and his crew do a lot of work with some of the really nice old homes in Wisconsin. So great to have him along again. Call in at 800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Let's turn to Brogan in Eau Claire next. Hi, Brogan. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry. I have a question actually regarding a commercial property that I'm looking at.
Okay.
It's an old Wausau home.
Okay.
And it's zoned commercial currently. And but I'm looking to move my business to it, but it's not currently occupied by any business. And I've contacted the I live up in Chippewa Falls County, Chippewa County, and I've contacted the zoning person, and he said, well, you know, you got to make sure you comply with commercial code, and it right now it's not doesn't meet the ADA Act, the American Disabilities Act, and yeah. So I've just been struggling with, because then I talked to a different person that worked for the state that does, I guess, inspections, and he said, well, you don't always have to meet the code if it's already been zoned commercial. It must have met at one point, and so you should be able to move your business there as long as you're not doing any major remodeling. So I'm a little confused as to, I guess, yeah.
Where to go.
What I need to do. Yeah, yeah. Exactly, where to go, and yeah. If I do need to meet the Disabilities Act, where would I even find somebody to
do that
help
work.
Me with that?
Okay.
Right. Well, there's a whole bunch of questions here, and we're getting a little bit out of my expertise. I'm quite familiar with the Americans with a Disability Act. I think the first place to start with is you've talked to the zoning administrator, and they've said you can move your business there. You need to talk to the building inspector for whatever jurisdiction this is, a township or a village or whatever, and say to him, what do I need? And if he says, well, you need a wheelchair ramp, well, then you're going to need a wheelchair ramp. Now, if he says you don't need anything, go ahead and move in. That doesn't necessarily mean that somebody isn't going to file an ADA complaint against you. So I feel that we really need to make our places accessible one way or the other. This stuff is all covered in the commercial code. And you really need to have an architect or an engineer who knows the code tell you what you need to put, because if you put up the ramp with the wrong handrail, with the wrong slope on it, etc., you're going to have issues. And you're going to have a question as to restrooms. Depending upon the size of the business, do you even need a restroom? If you have a restroom, does it have to be compliant? These are all things that I can't answer for you. And there are times when we just need to get professional help. So first, we need to find the limit of what the jurisdiction having authority is going to say to you, the township or the city, as far as the inspector. And then I think I would strongly advise you to talk to a local architect or an engineer and just say to them, what do I need to make this thing be compliant?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right. There we go.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Brogan. Appreciate it. Marty in Lake Geneva up next. Hi, Marty.
Good morning, gentlemen. You had a previous caller talking about replacing or getting a skylight replaced. We do slate and tile roofs. We've done it for the last 30-some years, and we're replacing 9 skylights on a home right now. The general contractor took the dimensions and gave them to me as far as ordering the Velux skylights. Well, he measured the outside dimensions of the skylight itself. What he should have done is measured the outside dimensions of the curb that the skylight sits onto.
Oh.
So it's a minor glitch. We have to build out the curb a little bit, but just for the homeowner chooses to tackle this, he might want to get the correct measurements before he goes looking for a skylight.
Oh, yeah.
That's true. Fortunately, Velux, almost all of their skylights, I think maybe all of them, are made in very standard dimensions where they are either going to fit between 16 on center rafters or 24 on center trusses. If you want to go wider than that, then you really get into some issues, as you probably know, because you just can't modify trusses economically.
Right.
And even headering and engineering rafters, you get into a whole different level of problems. So one of the most important things is to measure where these framing members are. If somebody's going to put in a skylight, make sure that your 24 on center trusses aren't 22 or 19 on center, because we've seen 19 on center. So that is a good caution.
Well, measure
twice and order once.
Yeah.
I should have mentioned this is an existing home, probably built in the 20s. So it's certainly not going to be a truss.
Right. In the 1920s. There were trusses in the 1920s.
Oh, really? Okay.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Our old factory on Pearl Street in New London had a 40-foot wide clear span on the first floor for making carriages and wagons, and there's this gigantic pony truss on the second floor that held up the ceiling of the first floor plus the roof. So
we just do the residential.
Ah, okay. I won't call you for a new roof on that one then.
No, no. But I'll give you a bid.
Thanks, Marty. Yeah, appreciate the call. All right, Virgil in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Virgil.
Hi. I live in a condominium complex of townhouses.
Yeah.
And we have a thumping noise that has started several months ago. We had a bathroom contractor come in who had did our bathroom, and there was a leak around the exhaust fan. We had him look at that to repair that, and then we had him just go around the house and come down in the basement and try to figure out where this thumping noise, what this is. We think possibly it's a something from a water pipe, because coming into our unit is a, I don't know, 4-6 inch water pipe that supplies several different units, possibly. But we really are stumped. And I'm just walking around down here in the basement. I'll be quiet. You possibly can hear, but it's like a thump, 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 and it's a very low pitched thing, and it just has baffled.
This brings to mind the short story, The Telltale Heart.
Yeah. Boy.
That I don't think this is one we're going to be able to diagnose on the air. I mean, I've heard lots of noises in houses where things move when the heat ducts expand and contract and those sorts of things. But that sort of thumping, if it were a drip and it's been going on for months, obviously there'd be water someplace. So I'm afraid I'm totally stumped on this, Larry.
I can't for the life of me. When you mentioned thump, I thought about my neighbor in his hot tub, because when he turns on the music, if he in his hot tub, sometimes the house thumps a little bit. But that's a whole different thump, Virgil. I'm sorry, I'm not making fun of you here. I wish we could help, but where would he go? I mean, who would he talk to?
I think what I'd probably do is I'd go out and buy a cheap stethoscope.
You would?
Yeah. I've got a whole bunch of them. It's real interesting to go listen to your walls, and you can hear water in the walls. You can hear bats in the walls. You can buy a stethoscope, I think, for $26, and take it around, put it on a pipe, put it on a heat duct, put it on a wall, and you'll get
a cool idea.
Yeah. We use them in inspecting, because you can actually hear water dripping from an ice dam inside a wall by using a stethoscope. And they're inexpensive. You just stop at a medical supply store. In fact, it's possible that even your neighborhood Walgreens has one. But I would start with that, because that is giving you some direction. When you're standing in the middle of the basement, you hear a thumping, you have no idea where it's coming from. But if you hold it against different walls, it's going to be louder one place than another. So invest in a cheap stethoscope.
I love that idea. There you go, Virgil. Thank you very much for calling. And Anson in Waukesha, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I have a question about mold, if you guys are still talking about mold.
Sure.
My parents, when I was a little child, there was just like a concentrated smell in the laundry area that used to build up, which was by throwing wet laundry on the floor in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was this mold smell. But now it's like kind of smells kind of like fumating in the entire house. Like you can even smell it like out on the sidewalk. I know that they probably won't do anything to fix it, because it's, you know, there's kind of like quarters in the basement, like there's pathways in the basement to get around things. I was wondering if it is like, would it be like a health issue if for like visiting or like having like some of the grandkids sleep over, stuff like that.
Yeah, you can get mycotoxins out of many types of molds. The most common are the aspergillus and the penicillums that grow inside. I think there's 400 different varieties of those. But you can also get some of the really nasty stuff like the Stratibotrys if you've got cardboard boxes and old newspapers in the basement. I would take this as a serious health risk. Knowing nothing else, it's always best with these toxins to assume there's a serious health risk. You can certainly, especially with older people, with children, you can really end up with some bad breathing problems, skin rashes, all kinds of things. So I think that if there's pathways in the basement and things and there's a hoarding situation going on, I've dealt with four or five of those in Madison in the last 5 years, and they can really, really be serious. So I would, you may have to get social service agencies or family or something seriously involved in this, but from what I've seen of these issues, and the other problem we have is when I found these issues, I found mice.
Yeah.
And histoplasmosis, nasty, nasty fungi and things growing from the droppings of animals. So I would take this really seriously. You know, if they're family members, you know, somebody needs to have a serious talk and take some action.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. But it's not something you'd want to have your children, young children, around.
No,
well, or your parents.
No,
you know, they it's somebody needs to take a look and help out. So there you go, Anson. And since you called, you're concerned. I bet it's going to be on you and maybe some siblings or what have you. But good luck. I appreciate your call. And appreciate everybody's calls. We're going to take a quick look at the news and weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the IdeasNet. And then we'll be back with John Freiberger, and he's with us right up until 12:30. Stay with us. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here taking a look at home improvement issues with John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates of Fitchburg. He's, among other things, a Wisconsin registered home inspector. He and his company folks deal with a lot with older structures and evaluating and working on them. Always fun to have him come by. You can join in, 800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Tony in Egg Harbor, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Oh, thanks for taking my call. Hi, John. Hi, Larry. Great show. I always love this day when you have the home show on.
So you have an answer for us on the thumping.
Maybe. I don't know. This is 40 years of heating experience, so everything's an estimate, so just take it for what it is.
Yeah.
Sometimes when copper pipes are installed, now it could be either domestic hot water or space heating, the installer doesn't leave the proper amount of clearance around the pipe as they drill through joists and come up inside floorboards, that it's thermal expansion, so the pipe will actually get longer when it gets hot,
mm-hmm.
and it rubs up against either a floorboard. In case of a baseboard hot water heat, the caller may want to, if he has cast or even copper fin tube base heat, is to turn his thermostat up and start listening. And as that pipe gets hot, it's going to expand and it's going to give a real rhythmic hollow grade bumping sound. Or it could be his domestic hot water, so all they have to do there is start running their bathtub and start listening. And in both of those cases, the solution is pretty easy. Just you have to be careful, get one of those all-in-one vibrating tools, and just open up maybe about 3/4 of an inch around every penetration, and that should leave enough room for the pipe to expand and contract.
Yeah. Well. Well, there
possible?
You go. It's definitely possible, Tony. Thanks.
We certainly know we get a lot of noise in houses from thermal expansion and contraction.
Yeah, but I still like the stethoscope idea, though, too.
Well, he can actually put that on the copper water pipe and see if he's getting feedback through it, because the copper water pipe is going to transmit sound pretty easily. So Tony's given us the first use for the stethoscope. We just have to get Virgil to purchase one.
Right, there we go. Thanks, Tony. Yeah, appreciate the call. We have Donna in Green Bay has a brick home, and a few of the bricks have lost their faces. What causes this, and who should she call about fixing it? Will she be able to find matching bricks?
Now, let's see. We're doing Facebook, so we don't know how old this house is. Mm-hmm. Generally, when the faces come off the brick, it's called spalling, and we're getting moisture behind the face of the brick, and during the winter when it freezes, it pops the face off. As far as matching brick, there are an awful lot of brick out there. There's some that are very easy, such as like the old Janesville or the Watertown. There's others that are more difficult. The largest brick matching service in the United States is run by a gentleman by the name, I think it's Frank Gavin, and I believe it's called U.S. Heritage Brick. But if you Google brick matching or historic brick, I think Frank's website is always the first one that comes up. We have used him several times on some very old hand-formed wood kiln bricks with good success. And basically what you do is send him a picture with good measurements, and Frank will send you a brick. I think he has something like 4 or 5 million bricks at his yard in Illinois. But try to find out how this moisture is getting in. Maybe you need some tuck pointing. So you may want to talk to a good mason up there in Green Bay and have him come and inspect. If there's a lot of lippage because the mortar joints have pulled back and the water's getting in at the top of the brick, let's not start replacing bricks until we cure the problem that's causing the loss of face.
Tim on Facebook needs to replace the shakes on his 1920s house. He wants a more modern look. What are his siding options? He has a small budget.
Okay, I'm assuming by shakes he actually means sawn cedar shingles, which are the thin shingles. The shakes are the big hand splits.
Yeah.
And, yeah, those, after 80 years with lots of paint, can really start peeling. The budget's always a question because we really want to do this right. And if he has an older house, we want to take everything off rather than go over the top of it. Depending upon his energy situation, we want to at least put a weather barrier wind wrap on it. We may want to put an inch of foam. And then after that, the cheapest thing out there, of course, is going to be vinyl siding. If it's a house where he wants to keep the historic look, there are cement board sawn shingle looks from Hardy Company.
Yeah.
So I would do a little bit of research, but don't get into this project unless you know what your energy situation is. And you may want to actually have the house do some thermal imaging and a blower door test and see how much it leaks. So if you've got a small budget, let's try to at least reduce the utility budget so that our investment has a decent payback.
Louise in West Allis up next. Louise, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thanks, John and Larry. Glad to be able to talk to you. My concern is dehumidifiers are problematic in themselves. We've been talking about humidification today. Has anybody ever heard of the wave ventilation system?
Now, do you say wave as in W-A-V-E?
Correct.
It's like a wave. Okay.
Now, they're a manufacturer, aren't they?
That's correct. They've been on the market approximately 20 years, so they say. And I'm just trying to find out if anybody heard of this, because I've never heard of it before. I've done some research. I know about the product. Mm-hmm. I just wondered if it works and if it's a good solution, if you're willing to put the money up front and have this unit installed in your home versus the laborious dehumidifier units.
Well, are they more of an air displacement system where they're promoting air changes and trying to break up air buoyancy issues?
Well, they claim they expel air mass in the house, but they can provide continuous ventilation to dry out the structure and prevent stagnation.
Mm-hmm.
It's a long cylinder tube that's attached to your basement wall, almost 6-7 feet, and they claim it vents to the outside, and that it runs for pennies a day versus what dehumidifiers generally run. So they claim they expel the air, replenish it, and ventilate.
Well, the problem I'm having with this concept is that I can see trying to pressure balance houses and things like that. There actually could be some savings in heating and cooling if we can stop houses from leaking so much by pressure balancing. But if they're expelling air from the basement that is 45% relative humidity in August and bringing in air that's 65% relative humidity, we're headed backwards. And we've run into these problems sometimes with what do you do with crawl spaces. And I keep coming back to dehumidification because our modern dehumidifiers, the ones where you go to Focus on Energy, you can look at their energy ratings, really are quite efficient. The only thing I know about the Wave system is a little bit from looking on it on email. I'm an ASHRAE, American Society of Heating, Refrigerating, Air Conditioning Engineers member. And so what I will do is I'm going to go to the ASHRAE journal and do some searching and see if I can find anything on this, because I'm afraid I'm too ignorant to give you an answer at this point. But I'll look into that, and maybe we can bring it up on the next program.
Another thing, just in addition, just sort of a quick check for you is just to go online to the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. And the Consumer Protection Division, you can find out whether or not there have been complaints filed against this particular product. And that might be worth, I mean, you can pretty quickly find that out. And it's a little more information.
Yeah, it's a good, diligent thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. I mean, I've done research. I looked up reviews on the internet, and, you know, they're half this, half that, and it's really hard to make a judgment whether or not this product is good. And it's not like it's just out on the market. Supposedly, it's been out there for 20-some years. So.
That's why it'd be good to check with Consumer Protection, because if it's been out for 20 years, there would and there are no complaints against it. That could tell you something, too. A little bit. Yeah. Anyway, John, you're going to look into this?
I'm going to look into this.
All right. There we go. So hang on, Louise. We're going to be looking into this a little bit more. But in the meantime, check out some more from the Consumer Protection folks. Pat in Mosinee has a question. Pat, hello.
Hi. I have a question about our home. It was built about 28 years ago, and I think at that time you'd call this a whole house air exchanger was installed.
Yeah.
The fan is in the attic, and now we're having someone come in to put a radon removal system in, and he said this type of system, the air exchange system, isn't used anymore, and it actually might be increasing our level of radon.
Are you sure it's not a whole house fan, or is it a big fan that sits in the attic and then you turn the fan on and it sucks air?
This is sucking air continuously.
Okay.
And the system is in the attic, but there's venting in several
places
of the home.
So it's like the old air-to-air heat exchanger. Or what they used to call.
That's what it sounds like, now called a heat recovery vent system. Actually, we often recommend heat recovery air systems when we have houses with radon, because you can actually dial in the number of air changes. And if you have a very tight house, like some of the newer houses that have only a half air change an hour, you really can't live in the houses without air-to-air heat exchangers. But I've never seen one put in an attic, because of the condensation issues, is that you would end up with some freezing. So I think maybe you need to talk to a local HVAC contractor in the Mosinee area.
Okay.
Have may simply not be working if it has not been serviced, because they have a filter system that, if you don't clean them, will fail. They have a transfer unit, and some of the older ones were cellulose-based, and they fell apart after a certain number of years. It's entirely possible that what you have up in the attic simply isn't working.
Yeah.
But that since you have all the ducting added to the house, it sounds like somebody engineered the HVAC system, and maybe a new basement located Life Breath or April Air or heat recovery vent system or even energy recovery vent system would be the thing to put in. It might make the radon system that you're looking at, which is probably going to cost you $1,000, unnecessary. So let's get a little information from a good HVAC contractor. Let's identify what you have. Is it actually working? And might we be able to use that to improve the air quality in your house?
Yeah.
So now, is it true that with new systems, you just have a, a fresh air exchange that comes right into the furnace, or not exchange, but...
It depends upon the system. We've designed systems where we had multiple outputs. We've designed systems where when the bath fan went on, that air went through the heat exchanger. There are a lot of ways of doing it. The least expensive is to link it to the return on the furnace. So that's the most common. But it sounds like your house, somebody may have taken a little bit of extra care. Was this an architect-designed house?
It was.
Okay. Wow. I think you may have a really good system that just needs some new mechanical parts or maybe some relocated parts. So,
well, and we have replaced the fan system. Mm-hmm. It originally was a high and low, and they just put it on a continuous low, and I can tell there's pulling when you... But anyway, we'll have a...
I'd get an HVAC person in there.
I try to figure out how many CFM it's developing, how many air changes per hour, and that's that sort of thing.
Yep.
And it could be that you need to have another intake and another output in the basement.
Yeah, that might do it. John and thank you again, Pat. John in Silver Bay, your turn. John, hello.
Hi there. Say thank you. I had to dig out my water line, put a new one in through my basement of my house through the cement blocks. And last year, and I put, I don't know what it was, some kind of a white material around, but it's leaking past there along the pipe and coming into the basement. And it's surface water is what it is.
Okay. So when it rains outside, we're getting some water. It's coming through that basement wall.
There you go.
Right.
And I'd like to, what have they got that'll stick to that black plastic pipe?
Oh, dear. We're getting a little out of my field here. There are a lot of really good adhesives out there. Like NP1, I don't know whether Sona Alaska, I don't know who makes something that would really stick to that. I think that what you may wish to think about, since you have a concrete block foundation and they leak so easily, is let's try to dry out the soil outside. So, is the grading good on the exterior? Are the gutters cleaned? Are the downspouts extended far enough? So maybe start there.
Well, yeah. Make sure you've got some. The soil is such that the water will drain away from the house.
That's right. And the standard is half an inch of pitch per foot for 10 feet. So 5 inches, basically 5 inches of pitch around your house. The other thing to be cautious of is if this is leaking all the time, then I've got a little bit of a concern about whether there might be a service leak.
Oh, yeah.
So that...
I had shut the water off in the house and at the pump, so there was absolutely no way that they would... I mean, that was off for a whole day, you know.
But
so
if,
I'm sure
if,
it wasn't that.
Okay. But does this leak all the time or only when it rains?
It just started this spring.
Okay, and we've had a lot of rain.
Yeah.
So let's check the things that I mentioned. Let's try to keep everything dry because with a concrete masonry foundation, they leak so easily because they're so water permeable and there's always so many cracks. It's just a good idea to follow good procedure, and you may not have to do anything with that particular wall penetration, and you may guarantee or at least improve the probability that you're going to maintain a dry basement.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you, John, for calling. And in Milwaukee has something for us. Hi, Ann.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm wondering if I need more attic insulation put into my roof edges. The problem is that at one spot on the east side of my roof, and this is in the middle of a long run, and then one spot on the west side of my roof, and that's at the end of a shorter run, I'm getting dripping at the edge between the back of the gutter and the fascia during winter thaws when there's snow on the roof. And my gutter and roof guy was here in early December to fix this, but of course, then during some early thaws this past winter, both the areas had these single drips again. And this has been a problem for several years, and the guy hasn't been able to resolve it. My roof has one shingle layer, and it does have ice and water shield, and there are soffit and roof vents.
Hmm. Okay, so you are getting ice damming, and the moisture is not coming into the house because... Fortunately, you've got the ice and water shield on, which is actually a code requirement in Wisconsin. So you have to look at two things in your attic. One is the insulation level, And depending upon what the geometry is of how the roof rafters meet the ceiling joists and things, it can be a little bit difficult to get good insulation at the edge of the roof. Sometimes you have to do that with foam. The other thing you have to take a look at is the venting, is you really want to make sure that you've got the insulation dams and chutes, sometimes called proper vents, so that the cold air from the soffit can come up into the attic, and then that your upper venting is open so that you get continuous airflow in that attic to remove the warm air that would be melting the snow. If the snow on your roof never melts, you're never going to get an ice dam, because the ice dam is snow that has melted, refreezing when it gets out to the cold roof edge. So have an insulation contractor take a look at that for you. And how old is your house, Ann?
It's from the late 60s. The roof is probably from 2000.
Yeah. If it's the late 60s, you may have a lot of air leakage into the attic, so you may have radiant loss due to too little insulation. You may have air leaks. You might even want to think about having an energy analyst come in, and many insurance companies now have them, or you can still there are still some independents out there. I think there's only 7 or 8 independents. Mm. But you may want to spend the $400 to $500 to really get a thorough energy analysis of your house, and then decide whether you need to insulate, air seal, add chutes and insulation dams, or all three.
Yeah, and you'll get a very good report from the energy person.
A lot of information. It may inform you about other things. You may find you've got some windows and doors that leak, or you've got some other things like the sill boxes may be leaking badly. So you may get information that is helpful beyond just getting rid of this annoying ice dam issue.
Yeah. And I did have someone come a long time ago, and I did have a lot of additional insulation put in my attic. So I think I'm going to try the first suggestion, because maybe they did miss getting it into that really narrow area. So
yeah. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Lee in Madison. Hi, thanks for calling. Have you got a quick question for us?
Yes, I do. And I really enjoy all the programs. Now, it's about my garage. And when my husband and I purchased the place, the floor had a crack. And it's a long crack. It goes in one area and then goes in another area, like toward the front, and it's really about as wide as a plastic knife, something like that.
Okay.
And I was wondering, would I have to just, what do you do with a floor? It's like down in the basement also, there's cracks.
Sure.
Okay.
I'll tell you what to do, because you're in Madison. I want you to go out to Country Concrete on Nesbitt Road. Take a couple pictures, talk to the people on the desk out there. Country Concrete out there sounds like a commercial, but they're very consumer friendly. There are a lot of ways of doing this depending upon the size of the crack, whether you use like a SonElastic SL1 or whatever. But take some pictures, go out and talk to the people out there, and they will point you towards the right product, the right primer if you need it, and the right techniques. They're real helpful, and you're lucky to be in the Madison area.
Country
Concrete on Nesbitt Road.
On that note, John, we're finished. Thank you so much. I know you wind up having a little additional work from calls from people or I'm sure emails that a lot of people appreciate very much. And I'll look forward to your next visit. Thank you.
Thanks much, Larry.
John Freiberger of Freiberger & Associates of Fitchburg, our guest. He'll be back. We'll talk with him again for sure. Tomorrow's Garden Talk, and we'll be talking about the Allen Centennial Gardens and, of course, about flowers. In the meantime, you stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.